You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The world-famous Dunedin Study is a longitudinal study that began in Dunedin in the 1970s. The study involves over 1,000 participants and that have been involved in phasic assessment days since their birth. The study has reached its 45th year and has just completed its assessment day for its participants, who are now 45 years of age. Currently, the Museum of Transport and Technology here at Auckland is holding an exhibit on the study called A Slice of Life, which celebrates the findings made by the group and the work of all the participants. I spoke with the Dunedin Study's Cohort and Assessment Manager, Sean Hogan, about the study, because I wasn't 100% sure. I'd heard a little bit about it, but didn't know everything. So here is Sean telling us exactly what the Dunedin Study is.
So the Dunedin Study started back in 1972. There was a paediatrician in Dunedin called Dr. Patricia Buckfield, and she was studying all the babies that came through Dunedin Hospital. And Dunedin is unusual because they have a single place where all the babies were born at that stage. So by studying all the babies in her hospital, she was actually studying all the babies born in Dunedin. And she began to realise that people weren't doing longitudinal research. And she was working at a time that they were just starting to be able to save little babies. And nobody knew what the downstream effects of that would be. So she decided with others to look at 1 year's worth of babies in great detail. And they were the babies born in 1972 and 1973. There was 1,661 babies born. And at age three, they were all studied at birth. At age three, they contacted them all, and they found that 1,037 were still in the Dunedin area, and they became the sample that became the Dunedin study. So it originally started as a study of little babies and how they developed. So you can imagine it might run to maybe age seven. In the end, they were seen at 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, 15, 18, 21, 26, 32, 38, and most recently at 45.
They're now
considered the 1,000 most studied people in the world. And the assessment day started as fairly basic tests that might take maybe 2 or 3 hours. The last time we saw them at 45, we brought them back from anywhere in the world to our research centre at Dunedin, and we had them for a day and a half. We put them through every test almost that you can imagine, including a 75-minute functional MRI. So they were put into an MRI, and then they were asked to run various tasks and things. Anybody who's been in an MRI knows it's not that easy. 75 minutes is a heck of a long time. So that means that we've now got a lifetime of data on these people.
When they come in for assessment days, are you looking at sort of developmental, physical changes and movement changes, or what sort of data is being taken from these people?
To give an idea of the amount of information, just that sentence you've said, is it about how they move? Well, you just drop that in. One of the tests that we brought in for the very first time at phase 45 was we brought in an electronic walkway, and we looked at how the study members walked. We did lots of different walks with them, including walks which actually tested their minds as well. As so you'd get somebody to do a walk, and then you'd ask them to carry out a cognitive task at the same time. From that, we've published a paper which seems to show that the faster you walk, the longer you're likely to live. So the speed of somebody's gait seems to be a really good indicator of other health variables. Because we also take 15 vials of blood. We check out their blood pressure. We check out their teeth. We check out almost every sort of biological measure that you could take for people. And that allows us to do some of the most interesting science. So just a very quick overview. There's been world-class results in criminology, mental health, dental health, genetics, the downstream effects of difficult and abusive childhoods. And now, most recently, the pace of aging. You're asking about, you know, how people change. Well, when the study members were 38, so the last time we saw them, we took about 18 different markers of health. Now, they could be quite simple markers, like everybody had their photo taken. And then those photos will be aged by independent raters. So those photos will be put with other photos, and people have to decide how old somebody looked. Or it might be inflammation markers in the blood, or how many teeth they've lost, or what their blood pressure was, or whatever. From that, we ended up with about 19 different. From all of that, we were able to say that although our study members were 38, their biological age ranged from around about mid-20s to almost 70. So our study members, some of them appeared to be almost aging backwards. Others were aging at sort of 2.4 years per year of life. Now, if you can understand why people are starting to do that, why people are aging differently, well, that can change so many things down the track around how much it costs to keep New Zealand running. As we face so many more sort of over 60s, over 70s in the future.
I just wanted to ask a little bit about the members themselves. How many people have stuck with it over the time? Has it been everybody or have people sort of dropped off?
Well, we lost, we've lost around about, I think, 38 study members who've passed away since the study first began, which is about what you'd expect. And they passed away of things that are broadly you would expect. When people are young, it's accidents. And as they reach middle age, you're starting to see see things like cancer and things starting to appear. But an internationally renowned longitudinal study, by midlife, all of our study members are now about 46, might expect to have 70% of living study members still involved. The Dunedin study saw 94% of living study members at phase 45. So, huge overgeneralization, but if you still have a pulse, you're still coming.
So, obviously, when these people were, you know, babies, they didn't decide to go into the study themselves. Was that something that their parents gave consent for the study to be done on these people, and they've accepted it as it's gone along as part of their life, I suppose?
Yeah, I think to be honest, this study could only have happened in New Zealand at the time that it did. So it started in the 70s. By the time the study members reached sort of teenage years, they then got the choice about whether or not they attended. But by then, it feels like a relationship had been built up. And really, the job for us throughout adulthood has been not to damage that relationship, to try and keep that relationship good.
What sort of reputation does the study have globally, despite just being something that, started in little old Dunedin down south?
Yeah. Well, it's... Phil Silver, who was the founding director of the study, used to have a saying. He used to say, you know, it's very well known overseas. Because for many decades, it was never really that well known in New Zealand. But because it always published in The Lancet and various other really high-class journals, it was really well known abroad. I think that's changed quite a lot. You might remember there was a four-part documentary on the study that was on TVNZ. And in fact, it's still there. So if anybody's interested, they can find that there as well. I think that over time, its sort of fame has grown in New Zealand, but I think it got well known very early in academic circles. The advantages that we have is that the information that comes out of the study is in so many different areas. So if I just pick a couple for a minute, criminology. Criminology, probably the biggest thing that came out of the study was they studied how young people offend. And young people offend a lot, relatively. But the vast majority of them are what's called time-limited offenders. So they offend for a period of time, and it can be quite serious offending. And then they sort of grow out of it, and they end up as completely upstanding citizens. The trick is not to try and make sure that those young people don't end up in jail and don't end up in gangs, because they're things that turn people into lifetime offenders. Now, that information, together with other information about how brains mature, was put together in what's called an amicus brief. That's when a load of experts write on behalf of somebody. And it was written on behalf of somebody over in America. a case that was before the Supreme Court. Some American states had this lovely practice that if you committed a capital crime but you were under 18, so in that 16 to 18 period, they would hold you on death row until you turned 18 and then execute you. So the information from the study and other information went through, and the Supreme Court decided it was illegal to execute the person who was being considered. Now, it went wider than that. It was then declared illegal to execute anybody who had offended younger than 18. This wasn't an empty threat. On that day, there were 72 people on death row in the US. And even worse, most of them were in certain states. And they'd executed people before. Prior to this decision, 22 young people were executed when they reached 18.
It's incredible that studies like that do impact so seriously and change the lives for those people.
I think impact is the thing, and communicating that impact is something that academia's generally not been that good at.
I understand that the Dunedin study is its aim to monitor its members from cradle to grave. What is there a plan for the end? Obviously, it's could go on for quite a few more years still.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Researchers and people coming into it later on .
Well, I think there's a few funny things here. The first is that the people who are most experienced in the Dunedin study now are the study members. They've been through more phases.
They know more about it than everybody else.
than any of the staff, because most staff might be around for just one or two or three, either as they move forward with their careers or as they retire. The study members in some ways are the experts at this. So I'm sure they judge us quietly, was phase 45 a good phase or a bad phase? Did we do well? but there'll be a point where it stops being perhaps as powerful. If we lost a large percentage of our study members just through age or attrition, then what we say will stop having the sort of power that it has at the moment. But I think one of the other things that's really helped the study is that there's been relatively little change. So Phil Silver was the first director of the study. He was in for sort of 20 years. And Richie Poulton has been in for almost the last 20 years. We've only had two directors. I think managing change in this sort of longitudinal study is really important, because if there's constant change, or if people don't feel like you understand what the study's really about and what it means, I think that's how you lose study members.
This study is unique, and you said earlier when we were talking that you think this is probably something that only could have happened in New Zealand at the time that it began. How many places across the other places in the world have tried to do similar studies over large groups of people? Because 1,000 people is also a huge number to still be involved in a study after 45 years.
There are lots. I mean, one of the things about a longitudinal study is you can't hurry it. So if you wanted to repeat this study the way we do it today, you'd have to wait 45 years to get to this point. Now, there is lots of things that people do to sort of get around that. So now in the days of admin data, where government departments and things keep data on people, you can try and form groups and look at their past histories with their permission. But it just takes such a long time, and it isn't cheap. It's much cheaper to send out a questionnaire to people. It's even cheaper to send out an interviewer to somewhere and, interview your study members. But it is quite expensive to set up world-class labs and then bring 1,000 people back, maybe from Auckland, but also maybe from the UK or from India or from wherever they happen to be, and bring them to Dunedin, put them up and put them through a day and a half of testing. So I'm not seeing a whole heap of people doing it that way starting now. But there is lots and lots of longitudinal studies all around the world. It's just that we happen to think ours is the best.
Of course, and you absolutely should, exactly. That was Sean Hogan from the Dunedin study. We will be right back after this.
Can you imagine the world before coffee?
I'll tell you what, I'm two coffees deep right now, and I'm still having trouble imagining the world. There's just so many bits in it. You know, it's just hard to keep it all in your head.
Maybe you have another coffee and try again.
Imagine Auckland before coffee. Thanks to Atomic Coffee Roasters, you don't have to. Auckland's original coffee roasters and your local since 1992. Swing by their Kingsland-based cafe and roastery or shop online at atomiccoffee.co.nz.
Whānau Marama New Zealand International Film Festival is back for 2020 with 79 feature films and 7 collections of shorts, all from 41 countries, screening at home online. Premiere tickets are now on sale, so get online, check out the program and get settled in for the cinematic event of the year. Whānau Marama New Zealand International Film Festival, July 24th to August 2nd. Find everything you need at nziff.co.nz.
The last few months have been, let's just say the last few months have been a fantastic and unbelievable garbage fire.
But look, there, behind that cloud, a tiny ray of sunshine. Could it be? Yes!
Alt and 95BFM's ultimate winter road trip.
We're treating one lucky 95BFM listener to the roadie of a lifetime, including car hire from Snap, 2 nights accommodation for two at the Powderhorn Chateau in Ohakunei, ski passes for you and a mate to straighten your stuff on the slopes, full equipment hire from TCB Ohakunei, and more to be announced.
It's a midwinter Christmas miracle.
Alt and 95BFM's ultimate winter road trip.
Grab your B-card and stay tuned to 95BFM to be in to win. Thanks to Alt. Check them out at getalt.com.
An exhibition on the Dunedin Study called Slice of Life, the world-famous Dunedin Study, has opened at the Auckland Museum of Transport and Technology. I spoke to exhibitions manager Rebecca Britt from MOTAT about the exhibit and what visitors can expect to see when they visit MOTAT. I began by asking what the Slice of Life exhibition is like.
So we're thrilled at the moment to have Slice of Life, the world-famous Dunedin Study, on display at MOTAT. The Dunedin Study is an extraordinary scientific study that started at the University of Otago in 1975, so it's 45 years and it's still going strong. And this exhibition brings to life both the science itself, the study and the findings that have come through it, but it's the way it's been put together is really quite fascinating. It's a trip back through our last 4 decades of New Zealand life. It really is about the science of us, the science of life in New Zealand. So I think it's quite a fun exhibition, as well as really quite fascinating looking at these different scientific findings that have come out.
So what sort of findings can people expect to see at the exhibition? Is it interactive? What is it going to look like?
So the exhibition is a combination of objects, so looking at social, cultural and technological changes that happened over those last 40 years since the 70s. So people will have a little bit of especially those who've lived through those decades, will have a little bit of a shock of recognition when they see some of the set pieces that we have on display. So we've got living rooms and bedrooms made up in each of the decades, as well as showcases full of objects that people will recognise as. So anything from fondue sets through to Darth Vader helmets and my favourite things like there's Alf dolls that I recognise from my childhood in the 80s and hunters and collectors movie posters on the wall from the 90s bedroom, which is a little bit of a blast from the past. I wasn't ready for when I saw it. but we've also then got some interactive activities. So there's some great opportunity to take a photo of yourself and see what happens when you smoke, what the effect of obesity is on you, what happens to sun exposure. So that's an interactive experience. There's also a great interactive that measures your heartbeat as well, so you can see your heart beating in real time. And these are ways of bringing to light some of the themes of the study that they uncovered. Things about cardiovascular and respiratory health and emotional health and behaviours, sexual and reproductive health. Like all of these things have been studied over the lifetime of these 1,000 individuals. But it's brought to life in a really fun way.
Why is MOTAT holding this exhibition? Why is it important to bring it to Auckland for Aucklanders to see?
Yeah, the Dunedin study is quite interesting because, yes, it started in Dunedin, but, of course, most of those participants are now scattered throughout the country, so there's quite a lot of them who live up here in Auckland, as well as around the world. But one of the reasons we wanted to bring it to MOTAT is because our key messages are around the ways in which science and technology and innovation intersect with our lives every day. And innovation is not only about, I guess, inventing the next piece of tech, it's also about thinking about problems in new ways, looking at problems from different angles. And the Dunedin study really shows how the power of inquiry, I guess, that fosters this new kind of thinking and innovation and leads to scientific discoveries which have impact on our lives in ways we probably don't really recognise, that new policies, health outcomes have improved, and new technologies, of course. So that's kind of why we wanted to bring it together and share it with our visitors here at MOTAT.
Do you have anything else to add about the exhibition at MOTAT, where, you know, when people can come and see it, when's the best time to go, who's going to be there?
So the exhibition is on display at MOTAT until October the 4th. It's great time over the school holidays to come along. We've got some great things on display, as well as Slice of Life. We've got our Science Photographer of the Year, and we've got a great school holiday program on at the moment, the Treasure Hunt, as well as all our old favourites like the trams and our interactive exhibition. So come along, enjoy it. We've been enjoying listening to lots of families and groups come through and really use the exhibits as a jumping off point to talk about their own experiences and share their own memories. It's been really wonderful.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.